Coming to you from Skybird Studios in Northumberland, New Hampshire, and the village of Groveton, the land where summer is on a Tuesday, it's the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick. Or you can call me North Country Fred. We play the dustiest of grooves from the early 1900s up to today. There's no agenda, no genre, just music that I enjoy sharing with you. I'm celebrating 50 years as a DJ. Thanks for listening, and welcome to the Thrift Shop. And welcome to everybody listening to the Radio Thrift Shop on WXDR Dolphin Radio 99.1 FM in New Orleans.
Restless breed, a tempest in a teapot, and the teapot is calling the kettle black. Rebelling, protesting, scattering vital forces because of the emotional maturity they lack. Young minds reaching far out in a hazy attempt, trying to grasp the unknown. That which is only made possible when the seed of experience has been sown. Nonconformists, they call themselves, these babes in the woods still fast asleep. Yet they fall in step, and with precision one follows the other, like little lost sheep. Conventional society is a bane to their existence. In arrogance coupled with anger, they shout in unison, hypocrite. But young and unripe minds are indeed ignorant minds. They can't comprehend that with the establishment they wallow in the same pit. They do not comprehend that while they are preaching love and expounding the words, love one another, they are practicing and peddling hate for society and for their father and mother. Seeking expression through the negatives of life, the tempest in the teapot brews with lust for body and mind. Society of the damned, they run in wild abandon and oblivion and unmindful of the human debris they're leaving behind. Their gypsy souls wander through the maze of their own creation and like a cat chasing its tail, round and round in circles they go. Never stopping for that brief moment of introspection that will reveal the answer to all they're seeking to know. In whose hands, then, can the future be entrusted when the moving finger writes precisely in despair? The seeds of tomorrow have been planted today. May God help the future for the fruit it will bear.
It wanders where it will. None can follow the whispering wind or cause it to be still. Out from the loneliness covering me, a way I strove to find, knowing the spark of the universe is in the human mind. Wander, wander, tarry away. Things I'll never see. Now the whispering wind is gone, my vision is undimmed. Never will I be alone again, I'll seek the whispering wind. Wanders where it will. None can follow the whispering wind or cause it to be still. Off from the loneliness covering me, a way I strove to find, knowing the spark of the universe is in the human mind. Wander, wander, carry a while with me. Vision is undimmed. Never will I be alone again. I'll seek the whispering wind. I'll seek the whispering wind. I'll seek the whispering wind.
Cindy Lane and Armin Mojico and the orchestra with Whispering Wind, released on Therese Records. And that is the one and only release on Therese Records. Before that, Beverly Garland and Tempest in a Teapot. And we started off with Harvey Anderson and Monday Night at 8 p.m., released on Mona Lee Records in 1959. And that was a very good year, the year ye old DJ Frederick was born. Well, this is DJ Frederick, and you're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop. We're cruising up and down the dusty aisles of music from the past century of recorded sound. If you'd like to send me an email, my email address is radiothriftshopnh@gmail.com.
Shalom Secunda was a songwriter, not a fisherman, but he could tell you all about the one that got away. You're on the Soundbeat.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some, until I first met you I was lonesome. And when you came inside, dear, my heart grew light, and this old world seemed new to me.
When Secunda sold a catchy Yiddish tune to a publisher in 1932, he did so for $30, or about $500 today. But when a relatively unknown trio of sisters released the song 6 years later, it went on to sell millions. Here are the Andrews sisters in 1938 with Bay Mare Bees du Chêne.
Means your grain.
As you can hear, the only Yiddish that remained in the song was the title, though it was also printed as the German Bay Mare Bees du Chêne. But any way you say it, it translates as, "To me, you are beautiful." It put the Andrews sisters on the map and was the first gold record by a female vocal group. And as for poor Shalom Secunda, not all stories have happy endings. But this one does. We've got it at soundbeat.org. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
DJ Frederick's tips on how not to do a radio show. Don't have a wavering voice.
Have that deep, mysterious DJ voice.
Don't use MP3s and WAV files. Use old records and tapes instead. Talk so fast that no one can understand you.
Don't play any current top 40 tunes.
Don't play any rap music. For more tips on how not to do a radio show, follow me at Radio Thrift Shop every Saturday night at 10 p.m.
here on Dolphin Radio.
Thank you.
And there's another tune from 1959, Abby Baker with Moccasin Rock, released on the Laurel record label from New York City. All right, you're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop on Dolphin Radio 99.1 FM in New Orleans. Coming up in a moment, we're going to hear more of the wonder of the age, Mr. Edison's new talking phonographs. We're going to hear part two of four from a vinyl record released on Argo Records back in 1971. So please stay tuned. Here's a brand new track from Carwin Ellis and Rio 18.
Bird note. The red knot is a chunky shorebird no bigger than a robin with one of the longest migrations in the animal kingdom. Every year, some of these birds travel around 9,000 miles from the Arctic tundra to Tierra del Fuego in South America. This epic journey depends on a critical stop oversight, the Delaware Bay. Here, hungry red knots arrive in droves each spring, timing their visit perfectly to the spawning of horseshoe crabs. The crabs' tiny greenish eggs are an energy-packed meal, just what the birds need to refuel for the next leg of their journey. But after decades of over-harvesting for bait and medical use, horseshoe crab numbers plummeted by nearly 80%. That has meant fewer eggs for the exhausted red knots. But there's hope. In 2013, fisheries managers in the U.S. banned the harvest of female horseshoe crabs in the Delaware Bay to take pressure off the crabs and the birds who rely on them. And in 2025, those protections were renewed. Horseshoe crabs in the Delaware region are at an all-time high since 2003, and red knot populations across the Americas have been low but stable since 2011. Protecting key stop oversights and managing fisheries sustainably are just some of the ways we can help migratory birds like the red knot complete their cross-continent marathon each spring. For BirdNote, I'm Lucina Melesio.
And now, on the Radio Thrift Shop, the wonder of the age, Mr. Edison's new talking phonograph. This is side two, so it's going to kind of start in the middle of things. But if you were with us last week, you heard the first part. I hope you remember some of it, because there is going to be a quiz.
At present, it does seem as if the manufacturers cater chiefly for the music hall world. We find in the catalogues columns of comic songs, some of a very low type, while a dozen sacred selections cannot be found from cover to cover. And yet I presume the makers and the editors claim to be Christians? Is every scientific novelty to be given over to the lower types of humanity?
I never was the one to go and stint myself. If I like the thing, I like it, and that's enough. But there's lots of people say that if you like the thing a lot, it'll grow on you and all that sort of stuff. Now, I like me Robert Stout as well as anyone. But Stout, you know, supposed to make you fat. Oh, and if any lardy-dardy madam wouldn't dare to touch it, because it might spoil her bigger the finished cat. Now, I always have any if you fancy it. If you fancy it, that's understood. And suppose it makes you fat, I don't worry over that. Cause a little of what you fancy does you good.
In many talking machine departments, young ladies are in charge of the records. And a young lady is often compelled to stand before young men and hear a machine blurt out something that brings a blush to her cheeks, until she has got so used to coarse songs that she ceases to blush. Then, too, the talking machine enters into the home life of every community, and the records referred to are either turned down as unfit, or they are listened to by children of tender years. Many a mother and father have said to me, "What a pity so many of the comic records are coarse." I know the opinion prevails in the minds of some people that a comic song will not be appreciated unless it has a little spice in it to make it go. My opinion is that if the record has any merit in it, more buyers will be gained than lost by leaving out the questionable spice.
In order to get popular songs recorded by artists who possessed recording voices, it was necessary to carry out a fair amount of pirate tactics. Songs had to be taken down in some way or other as they were being sung, either at a music hall or theatre. A miniature recording phonograph was taken into the theatre or hall to record the melody. A stenographer took down the words verbatim. It was sometimes necessary to make three or four visits before a satisfactory result was obtained. From these records and the stenographer's notes, an orchestration was made and an artist selected to make the record.
Our artists arrived in four-wheelers and hansom cabs. I remember George Mozart, a red-nosed comedian, arriving in a four-wheeler and unloading a heavy theatrical wicker trunk. This was dragged into the studio, and I asked George to rehearse while I continued my preparations. After what I thought was rather a long lapse of time, I looked into the studio to find him standing before the trumpet in full makeup, complete with red nose, whiskers, and costume. Dear simple George, had anticipated television by 35 years. With difficulty, I explained to him that to record his songs he need not have troubled to put on his makeup.
I don't think he knows what he was talking about. Does anybody know whether there's a glass of beer at once for home? I can give it another light. I will finish now. I'm just talking now, you know, just to waste time while this record's going through now, because I've got nothing else to say at all. Well, these machines are very awkward to put them down. Just time up now. Let me know and then I can go. There's a chap behind me and he opens a little trap door and he told me we've only got a quarter of a minute, see. So I don't think we can get any more in now. You know, that fella that's recording this now, you know, they call him Syncopation George. I think it's leg time. I don't know what to call him. I think I'll call him a parasite. Come on, and says that's an insect. I don't know, but I'm making inquiries about it. Is that right, George? Good health.
I never buy Becker and I'll tell you why. I can always get some shag. I spot a yob when he's barely on the job. Clump his ear and then I pinch his fang. Oh, the slave is down our neighborhood. I fill them with delight. As down their airy windows every night I shine my light. Once a lady suffer a debt, chained herself to me the bet. Going to do the same tomorrow night. I'm a policeman, I'm glad I'm a member of the force. I'm little Billy Green, PC. Only walk about in my uniform of blue. Absolutely nothing else to do. When people ever have a wonder fight, I shut my eyes and I can't see. I don't interfere with them, and they never interfere with me.
In those early days, the master records didn't last very long. In other words, it was not possible to make very many copies from each master before the sound waves on the master record failed. This meant that a record which sold in thousands would have to be sung many times by the artiste to make enough master records to satisfy the demand. In order to cope with the unprecedented demand for the song, I had to sing it over and over again. I used to begin at 10 a.m. and go on until 1 p.m. when I had lunch, start again at 2:15, and work through until 5. I kept that up for 5 consecutive days, but I made £75. I received it in gold. Yes, 75 golden sovereigns.
Neophone records were made of papier-mâché and were advertised as warranted indestructible. To prove this, Dr. Michaelis, the inventor of the neophone indestructible record, would assemble a group of potential buyers at the top of a four-storied building, then standing at the corner of Worship Street and the City Road, and demonstrate by throwing a record out of the open window to the street below. A boy then dashed down the stairs and retrieved the record. This was then played, and as it emitted its normal noises, this was clear evidence that it was none the worse for its rough treatment. But, although customers did not buy records to drop on the heads of unsuspecting pedestrians, yet all might have gone well, had not the records, when displayed in shop windows, curled up in the sun and assumed pathetic, surrealistic shapes.
Stop here. Are you looking for phonographic goods? If so, search no further, for we can and will supply you with the best at the lowest possible prices, quality consistent. Only the best makes stocked. We have no room for trash.
Have you seen the Rawlinson joint? If not, send the machine along and have one fitted. It'll interest you. The difficulties of leaky joints now completely solved. No crosspins, no rattle. Perfectly sound tight and automatically self-centering.
All the latest popular songs and bands on Britannia Records.
Henry Seymour's microphonic reproducer with pneumatic diaphragm stands easily first.
Do you possess a phonograph? If so, why not Townsley's patent speed indicator?
can be fixed in 5 minutes.
Excelsior Records, the loudest shilling record on the market.
What is a rectophone? Try it. It is the best scientific talking machine of the day. Frosted, 10 shillings. Polished, 8 shillings.
The Biophone, a complete revolution. No diaphragm, no metal horn, but a vibrating trumpet. The only real way of reproducing the human voice.
The ideal phonograph table can be raised or lowered at will. Assists reproduction by giving a clear and solid tone.
The flexible fibroid trumpet. Collapsible.
The Merrick Protector and Name Cap for phonograph records.
Our new patent flexible metallic trumpet connector. Neat in appearance.
The Prince of Wales said at the Guildhall, "Wake up, England." The Edison Bell Company now produce the Edison Bell Gem, the first machine made throughout in England by exclusively British enterprise. British capital, British workmen, British materials.
Clearance sale of shop-soiled and second-hand phonographs, disc machines and magic lanterns. Records at sixpence each, 5 shillings and sixpence assorted dozens. Concert records, various, 3 shillings and sixpence each. Pathé moulded, 1 shilling.
The gramophone, or rather the talking machine or phonograph, had divested itself of its swaddling clothes, but had not yet outgrown the stridency of its infancy. Serious musicians regarded it with contempt. The sale of instruments and records was restricted to small shops in side streets, mostly bicycle shops, where the phonographs, cylinders, discs and needles jumbled alongside spare wheels, pumps, tins of oil, repair outfits, and Welsbach incandescent gas mantles.
I believe the public appreciates the artistic record. I think the ordinary coon songs and so forth have had their day. I speak of that which I know. For example, our records by Mr. Ben Davis achieved an instantaneous success. Amongst our records by eminent artists are those of Sarah Bernhardt, Paul Rubens, Caruso.
Uno di voi più bene, Tornello di Pinicotti, eseguito da tenore Caruso, Anglo-Italian Commerce Company.
Charles Benjamin Hendon, aged 22, painter, was indicted for stealing a gelding, the property of Edward Ploughman, at Stratford. For the prosecution, it was explained that the horse was worth £16. The accused sold it for £4 and invested the money in the purchase of a gramophone. For the defence, it was contended that Hendon was of weak mind. He had been under the observation of the prison surgeon, who would tell his lordship that Hendon was what was called a born fool. His lordship remarked that the fact that the prisoner bought a gramophone with the money was certainly evidence of weak intellect.
We kept the shop for gramophones, and much to our dismay,
the blessed place caught fire one night, and as it blazed away, we rushed down in our nighties, and I got a dreadful shock. The records, they were melting, and I couldn't save the stock. Left, right, all alight, the records, they were burning. You made me love you, stuck like glue, and down me back went Ichiko. My wife slipped right on Jeremiah, and down one pen on the pipes of pen when the gramophone shop caught fire.
The telegraphone, invented by Valdemar Poulsen, engineer in Copenhagen. Registered in all lands by the anonymous company Telegraphonen Patent Poulsen. Denmark, June 1905. One speaks into an ordinary microphone, which is in connection with two or three elements. The undulating current arising from this is not conducted as formerly to a telephone, but to a little electromagnet, before whose poles a nickel or steel wire is led past. The current, varying according to the manner of speaking, magnetizes in different ways the iron kernels of the electromagnet, and in the same way the pole magnetizes the separate parts of the steel wire. The telegraphone can repeat the same speech hundreds of times without the clarity suffering, and the speech can be preserved for years.
Will the talking machine record of the future be made on a tape? A number of inquirers are asking themselves and others that question nowadays. In Poulsen's telegraphone, the sounds are recorded on and reproduced from a metal strip. Could a talking machine record be made in the same way? The idea is attractive and at first blush seems feasible. It would not be difficult to stamp or mould a record on material that could be wound on a reel, steel or celluloid, for example. What advantages does the strip record offer? Probably you will reply that a longer record could be made, that it would be possible to have an entire song instead of one verse and chorus. To be sure, the strip record would be indestructible. But it is questionable whether the disadvantages of length of tape and bulk do not overbalance this. And then, like player pianos, after a record has been reproduced, the tape would have to be reeled back again onto its original spool. That would take a longer time than is now required for changing cylinders and discs. I am not asserting that there will never be tape records. I only point out one or two obvious objections to them which must be overcome before they can be put on the market.
Since the remarkable experiments of Morse in 1844 and the unsuccessful efforts of Field in 1858, there have come with incredible rapidity one electrical art after another, so that in practically every respect civilization has been revolutionized. It is still too early to stand outside these events and pronounce final judgments on their lasting value. But we may surely entertain the belief that the last half of the 19th century was as distinct in its electrical inventions and the results as the first half was in relation to steel.
Changing over from zinc etching, with its limited possibilities, to recording on hard wax tablets marked an almost magic expansion in the gramophone record business. It also sounded the death knell of the phonographic cylinder as a musical instrument. Now we could give our ambitions freer scope. The wax recording meant a cleaner cut, less surface noise, and the music more faithfully registered. All this happened in 1901. Until that time, all these developments of flat disc recording had been held up by complicated patents in the hands of Emil Berliner, Edison, the American Graphophone Company, and the Columbia Company. An injunction brought to a standstill for 2 years the flat disc business in America. This was lifted in 1902 when the litigants pooled patents. To this pool, Emil Berliner contributed a sound box guided by a spiral groove, the Columbia, a stylus vibrating laterally and engraving a groove of even depth, and the American Graphophone Company, wax as a medium of recording.
The multiplex grand graphophone built for the Paris Exposition of 1900 monopolizes a large share of public attention. This is the largest talking machine ever constructed. The cylinder is of giant size, and there are three recordings on each cylinder. There are three horns which amplify the sound, which come simultaneously from the three reproducers tracking round the same cylinder. The machine is constructed so that the music may be divided into parts. One horn playing bass or contralto, the second tenor, and the third a piano or orchestral accompaniment.
A correspondent suggests that the double-sided disc is the record of the future. I cannot say how that may be, but it certainly has obvious advantages. There is economy of space. The record takes up the room of two single-sided ones. There is economy of handling. You simply turn the record over instead of having to take it off the pin and perhaps cross the room in order to exchange it for a new one.
An Oxford don who was asked to speak into the phonograph caused a general laugh when, after listening to his own voice, he turned to the company and said,
"This machine is very defective. It makes me speak in a peculiarly bumptious and affected manner."
The plaintiff, Mr. J.W. Beaton, sued the Great Western Railway Company for £3.15 damage to a number of gramophone records, which he had packed securely in a trunk and sent from Minehead to Hunstanton as passengers' luggage in advance. The box was, during transit, broken, and the records ruined. The damage was admitted by the company, but they contended that gramophone records were not personal luggage, since they were not for personal use, but for amusement. They paid £15 into court to cover loss of clothes, and repudiated any other liability. Judgment was given against the plaintiff.
Here in Edinburgh and Glasgow, it is getting quite a common habit in some districts for owners of gramophones and other similar torture instruments to put the nozzle of the machine outside the window and fire off all the latest and greatest songs. One Glasgow lady squared the account in a good fashion the other night. After suffering the gramophone for as long as flesh and blood could reasonably be expected to endure it, she brought out a large and voluble parrot, which is her chief pet, and hung it on the window alongside the talking machine. The contest which ensued was hard on the parrot, but the bird fought it out to the finish, and the last dying squeak of the gramophone was answered by a volley of polite abuse from the still lively Marco.
It is really appalling when one comes to consider the infinite possibilities that lie within reach of the manufacturers, to see the large amount of inferior matter that is poured out upon a long-suffering public. Matter more fit for a musical scrap heap, so to speak, than for the delectation of an Englishman's home. And there's the rub. On the one hand, you have the manufacturers declaring that they are only supplying what the public ask for. And on the other hand, you have the public saying they can only obtain what the manufacturers are pleased to supply them with.
Mr. Barry Owen, the managing director of the Gramophone and Typewriter Limited, came over to England one day in May 1898, took a single room at 31 Maiden Lane, Strand, put a gramophone down in one corner and dumped a portmanteau full of records in another, got a man to paint the mystic word gramophones on the door, and started out to make business. May 1898, and as I speak, we're only at the beginning of July 1903. One room in City Road to the great business organization known as the Gramophone and Typewriter Limited. Well, by May 1899, just 1 year after arriving, the whole of the Maiden Lane building had been absorbed for the use and profit of the new undertaking. The employees were working double tides. Starting at 8 in the morning, they would often be at it until the stroke of midnight. They couldn't keep pace with the orders, which poured in a constant stream from all parts of the kingdom. Dealers waited in a queue outside for their turn, like the theatre-goers nearby.
The supreme achievement of the company was, of course, in securing 11 records by Tamagno. The world's greatest tenor is himself a millionaire. There were other difficulties to be met besides those of cost. Tamagno is a great artist, jealous of his reputation, as all great artists are.
However, the gramophone conquered in the end. The recording staff of the company were for 3 weeks the guests of the great singer at his palace in San Remo on the Riviera. There, when the mood came, Tamagno made his records.
£1 each? You ask this question, perhaps. Tamagno is acknowledged to possess the voice of a century. He is an artist still in his prime. He is crowned with honours, and there echoes in his ears the acclamation of every capital in Europe. Think of it, the greatest artiste of not only the last century, but of past generations, inspired by the thought of singing for all future generations. This is not fancy, it is a fact. Is £1 too much?
It was now that I really began to take gramophones seriously. I say seriously because my first experiments in this direction were disastrous. They had come to me 2 years before, and after a great deal of persuasion and a promise that if I didn't like the records they should be destroyed, I consented to sing. And so they arrived one day in my house in Great Cumberland Place, with many mysterious-looking instruments, and after turning the house upside down, I sang. Never again, I said to myself as I listened to the scratching, screeching result. Don't tell me I sing like that, or I shall go away and live on a desert island out of sheer pity for the unfortunate people who have to listen to me. The records were therefore destroyed. But the gramophone people persisted. Never have I known such courtesy combined with such persuasion. They simply would not leave me alone. They said that no great artist, with the exception of Tamagno, had ever sung for the gramophone, and that if I would only give them another chance with their greatly improved apparatus, they were sure that I would be delighted. I did, and I was. I've always been one for having a shot at things, and I am glad I had a shot at this. I was no longer ashamed of my records. I was delighted with them.
Thank you.
One of the most curious features which the gramophone brought into my life was a succession of marriage proposals from people who had heard my records but who had never seen me. There was something almost uncanny in the idea of some man in the remote prairies sitting down in front of a little instrument, listening to the echo of my voice, feeling that he'd found his ideal woman, and writing to tell her so.
DJ Frederick's tips on how not to do a radio show. Don't have a wavering voice. Have that deep, mysterious DJ voice. Don't use MP3s and WAV files. Use old records and tapes instead. Talk so fast that no one can understand you. Don't play any current top 40 tunes. Don't play any rap music. For more tips on how not to do a radio show, follow me at Radio Thrift Shop every Saturday night at 10 p.m.
here on Dolphin Radio.
Spirals with Ring from their Lux LP. Proof that you never know what you're going to hear on the Radio Thrift Shop. Be adventurous and join us every Saturday evening at 10 p.m. here on Dolphin Radio. That's going to do it for this edition of the Radio Thrift Shop. If you have any requests or comments, email radiothriftshopnh@gmail.com. That's radiothriftshopnh@gmail.com. 73, and I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.